I don't know about you, but we're always looking for ways to get our kids involved and give back in our local community. That's why we're excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, which is the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers. Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. I would love for Violet to do this program when she's in high school.
This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, it's also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students.
What kind of cookies are these? Ooh, chocolate chip.
All right, what do we have here?
This is cruel and unusual.
Hi, and welcome to Happier in Hollywood, the podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. I'm Sarah Fain, a TV writer and producer living in Los Angeles, and with me is my high school friend and writing partner of 17 years, Liz.
That's me, Liz Craft, also a TV writer and producer living in LA. And apologies, Sarah, I'm getting over a cold and my voice is a bit hoarse and all over the place, but I will do my best. On this podcast, we talk about what it's like to be writers in Hollywood, how we balance a career and friendship, and how to survive the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles.
Happier in Hollywood is all about how to survive and thrive no matter where you are or what you do.
In this episode, we'll discuss the minefield of eating at work, introduce our new assistant, and answer a listener question about the job we're happy we did not get.
And we'll also have our weekly Hollywood hack.
So, Sarah, let's get started with a segment we call From the Treadmill Desks Of, where we talk about what's most pressing in our work psyches this week.
And this week, what's most pressing is eating at work.
Yes.
We mentioned in the last episode that we're starting a new job, which is very exciting for the people, which is an ABC show. It will be a new ABC show, probably mid-season. So one of the big things that happens at the beginning of every TV job is negotiating how the group is going to eat. So just to explain a little, in television, usually the writers all order lunch from the same place. What happens is the writer's PA, which is production assistant, will bring a menu into the room and kind of circulate the menu, and everyone writes down what they want to eat.
The most important part of the day.
Yeah, it's a thing. And then we also share a group kitchen. And as a group, you decide basically what offerings you want the kitchen to hold.
And the show, we should say, pays for the food the majority of the time.
Yes. There's a budget, and sometimes you can, people are like, hang back. You have to stop ordering for a while. You've exceeded your budget. And there's this very specific TV writer work food culture. And to some extent, this has to be a dilemma that's an element of every new job and jobs in general, right?
Yeah. I mean, how to eat at work is, I think, a universal problem / opportunity. Now, where we have an advantage as TV writers is we're always starting new jobs. I mean, yes, some people are on shows for 5 years, but a lot of us might have a new job every 6 months, every year. And so you always have the opportunity to start fresh and eat well and, more importantly, not eat badly at a new job.
Right. And then we also have a unique disadvantage in that there's always a fully stocked kitchen at every job with whatever you want. And then in terms of starting a new job, there's this culture of sending treats on the first day. So like on the first day of For the People, the studio sent this giant box of cookies. There's this place called Delicious Cookies and Milk, which is like where everyone sends their cookies from on the first day. We'll put a link to them on our
website.
Or
Sprinkles Cupcakes.
Those two. And then an agency sent a huge basket of junk food, basically.
Yes. And unfortunately, the giant box of cookies got just plopped down right in front of you and me in the writer's room. We were in the writer's room, which is where we sit around a table and do all our work. And an assistant came in and just went thump. And it was like, 50 cookies. Yeah.
50 of the most amazing cookies you've ever seen.
Front of us.
Yes. The gluten-free person and the diabetic sitting there staring down a box of giant, incredible cookies. So I took one home to Violet. I didn't eat one.
Yeah.
That was my strategy.
Great. I mean, in past times, you probably would have eaten one.
Oh, God, yes.
And I would have too. Not in recent past, but certainly there's a time I would have eaten like six.
Oh, absolutely.
But I thought taking one home to Violet was a good strategy.
She was
I didn't take
excited.
One home to Jack. I just don't even want that temptation.
That's smart. It's like, because I know I can't possibly have it. It's like, well, I can put one in my backpack. Yeah, it was a food moment of truth, and it was not the only one on the first day.
No. So then there was ordering lunch, which, as you said, is a whole process. And the restaurant chosen was like burgers and fries.
And onion rings.
And it was just like, oh, goodness.
The shakes were crossed off.
Yeah, you weren't allowed to. I think they were too expensive. You weren't allowed to order a shake. But it was sort of like, okay, how are we going to handle this? And there was like two salads on the menu, and we both got a salad. I was proud of us. What was interesting, though, is there's writers who were starting.
Yeah.
It's their first job, literally, as writers. And it was funny because one of them said, well, it's the first day. I'm going to just go crazy and order a burger and fries and onion rings. And I was thinking, like, don't do it because you're setting such a precedent. And that's the thing about eating at work. Whatever you start, it's very easy to continue,
yes.
Especially if you're starting with something bad.
Yes.
So, if you don't care, great, ignore this whole segment. You know, that's wonderful.
Yes, but if you have the metabolism of a, 11-year-old.
Yes. But if you do care, it really is true that where you start that first day is going to be really hard to change if you start with a burger and fries and onion rings. Because the job is very stressful. The hours can be long. And eating is a way to, as we all know, comfort yourself, get through a tough time. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to fall back on that.
Yes.
So you want to just start off strong, which we both did. And then I'm really going to be bringing Jenny Craig most days to eat.
Right.
But I didn't want to the first day because I felt too self-conscious, to be honest. I didn't want to bust out my microwave lasagna day one. I did bust it out day two. But anyway, so that was our first test, and we both passed.
Yeah, and then the second test is when the writer's PA comes in and says, what kind of snacks do you want me to get at the grocery store? And you, like, very boldly said, so should we all decide that we're only going to have healthy snacks? And then there became, like, immediately it was like, ba-boom.
Yes.
Silence descended.
It was an awkward, resounding silence.
Yeah.
The people in the room did not agree with my strategy.
Well, not all the people in the room. What was interesting about it is that there was a clear, very clear age divide in who agreed and who didn't agree.
Yes.
Like all the people who've worked in TV for a while were fully on board
with
the healthy eating strategy. And then like all the people who have not worked in TV for
and
a
while.
And are young. Yes. Clearly want like the chocolate and the chips and the, and the soda and the,
Yes. So the compromise was that the bad food quotes can be put on a top shelf.
Right. So those of us who don't want it don't have to look at it every time we go in there.
So we are going to have bad food, but we're also going to kind of try to hide it a little bit. And then we're getting good food too, like nuts with no salt.
Yes, raw nuts and almond butter and apples.
And good bars. Mm-hmm. And now my theory, what I think people should do, and I've said this before, is bring what you're going to eat. That's what I try to do. Mm-hmm. Or I know exactly what I'm going to eat. So I ask for green apples. I'll only eat from the kitchen green apples or Kind bars because I figure, how many bars can I eat in a day? I mean, I'm just going to get sick of them. So that's the only thing I'll eat that and, drink coffee from the kitchen.
Yes. You have to know going in what your acceptable snacks are. Like I brought in, because the first day I was like, God only knows what's going to be there.
Yeah.
So I brought in my snack bag kind of for the first week. I have these grass-fed beef sticks that I'm obsessed with Chomps.
Yes, Chomps.
Yes.
And my sister, Gretchen, who I do my other podcast, Happier With, who is extreme low-carb, she likes Nick sticks.
Yes,
so
Nick sticks are
like healthy Slim Jims. Basically.
Exactly, and they're delicious. And then I also brought in some paleo bars, and I have a specific salad dressing that I like that doesn't have sugar in it. And I have these, like, dried banana things. So I know that, like, those are the snacks that I will eat. And then when we start ordering snacks, it's apples and nuts and like almond butter.
Yeah. And I can't even go down the nuts road at all because, as you know, I will just eat so many nuts that it's out of control. And it can't be good for anybody.
Well, you know what they did get, which I thought was greater? They got the prepackaged bags of almonds. So they're raw almonds in bags and it's just one serving.
Yes.
So it's easier to avoid that.
It's easier. Nonetheless, I could eat like 10 of those bags. But yes, yeah. It is. If I'm desperate, maybe I'll have a bag of nuts. And then the other thing we do, and this is sort of associated with eating at work. Of course, we don't have our treadmill desks there because it just isn't possible to bring them to that office.
Yeah, we should say our regular office is on the Disney lot. These offices are on the Paramount lot. So 3 days a week we're at Paramount and 2 days a week we're at Disney.
Right, and which is a lot of fun being at Paramount. So what we're doing is taking loops around the Paramount lot. Now, this does two things. One, of course, it's always good to walk during the day. Mm-hmm. But two, I think a lot of times when you go for a snack – like we were saying about the sort of comfort eating, you really just want to change. You want to give yourself a little treat. And so by going on a quick walk around the lot, it sort of is the equivalent of having a snack. It just changes your mindset, your mood, your pace. It's a distraction. And then you come back and hopefully you can not have that bag of chips.
Right. And the Paramount lot is really fun. Like we shot Angel at Paramount. So we didn't write the show at Paramount, but the show shot there. So we spent a lot of time there pretty early in our career. So it's fun to go back there. It feels kind of like coming home in a way. And then it's just a cool lot to be on. Great shows shoot there. NCIS, which our friend Scott Gemmel runs. So it's like, you know, we get to run into Scott. Yeah.
The Veep writers are above us, which is fun. And then the writer's room we're in is going to be featured on ABC on 10 Days in the Valley because I think they used it for their writer's room.
Yeah,
so we'll be able to see our actual writer's room as a set on TV,
on
10 Days in the Valley, which I'm not sure when it premieres.
Transparent is there. The Blacklist is there. Dr. Phil is there. This Is Us is there. Grace and Frankie is there. I keep thinking maybe we'll run into Jane Fonda.
Oh,
that would be nice. Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda sighting.
Yes.
Fingers crossed.
So hopefully we'll run into all those people and be gawking at them instead of eating bad food.
Right, exactly.
So anyway, I think anyone can go take a walk around the block at work.
Yes, wherever you work.
Even if you're not on a Hollywood lot, you can at least, you know, circle the block and get your mind off of, you know, the Twix bar and the freezer.
Yes, and everyone can know in advance what their sort of personally approved work snacks are.
Yeah, that is the key. Do not go beyond that and do not make exceptions. And we'll have to have a whole separate segment about birthdays.
Oh, God.
let me just say that I don't eat birthday cake at work, period, ever.
And, you know, if you are one of those young people who thinks that all of this doesn't apply to you, wait 5 years because we are your future.
We are. Do you struggle with what to eat at work? Let us know your strategies and Instagram pictures of your worst office food temptations with the hashtag #HappierInHollywood, and so will we. Expect a picture of a giant, decadent food basket.
Next up, we'll introduce our new assistant, but first an ad break.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. For instance, her first job was as a movie usher, and she would walk around with a flashlight and tell people to get their feet off the seat, and I just love hearing about it. Well, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother or your mom figure's life for years to come. And at the end, you get it all put together in a book. And I know I will be so happy to have that book on the shelf and be able to open it anytime I want and read a wonderful story about my mom.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Hollywood. That's storyworth.com/Hollywood to save $10 on your first purchase. Okay, Liz, here's some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, multiple systems, delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs, you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors.
Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hollywood. NetSuite.com/Hollywood. NetSuite.com/Hollywood.
So, Liz, let's move on to a segment we call the Outer Office. There's big news in our Outer Office.
Yes.
We have a new assistant. We searched far and wide. Brooke talked to, I think, like 30 people. We interviewed 7.
Yes, and it was a very hard decision, unexpectedly hard, because we were really impressed with a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we got like over 120 resumes by the
Seriously?
End of the process.
Oh,
it was
my God.
Nuts. But our favorite candidate was Boafwa Darko, and she is here with us. Welcome, Boafwa.
Yay. Hi. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for being here. This is really trial by fire because you just started like 3 days ago.
Yeah.
This is your third day.
Yeah, you're just like jumping right in.
Yep. Before we begin, because you have an unusual name, I just want to say how it's spelled and then you can kind of slowly pronounce it. It's B-O-A-F-O-A and it's pronounced...
Boafwa.
Boafwa.
Boafwa. Yes.
And it's a Ghanaian name.
Yes, my family's from Ghana.
And Darko is a really cool name. So you've got definitely the coolest name of anyone we've ever worked with.
Thank you.
You have that title already.
So Boafwa, do you want to introduce yourself and just tell our listeners a little bit about you?
Sure. So first, you should know that I'm Liz and Sarah's new assistant, and they are great.
Oh, thanks.
I am Ghanaian, but I was born and raised in Prince George's County, Maryland, and I am an outspoken feminist and an aspiring writer in Los Angeles.
Nice. And you graduated from Wellesley.
I did. So I went to Wellesley College, home of Hillary Clinton. We were very proud of her. And after college, I decided I wanted to work in Hollywood and I came out to LA.
Yeah, tell us about that. Things sort of didn't go exactly as you planned.
So I was really naive. When I moved here, I just kind of knew I wanted to work in television. I hadn't landed on being a writer yet. But then when I got here, I just realized that, oh my God, all those names in the credits, they have jobs and I can do any one of those jobs. I don't know what I want to do. So for a while I PA'd. I also worked as a script supervisor for a little bit. I thought maybe I wanted to be an AD.
Let me just stop you and say a PA, as we said, is a production assistant. A script supervisor is a very detailed job where you have to keep track of the script. It's a job that's on set. It's a very demanding job. Mm-hmm. And then an AD is an assistant director, also a production job.
Yes. Thank you for explaining.
Yeah.
I took some classes at Los Angeles Community College for a while just to figure out what I wanted to do. But in the meantime, I decided to not work in Hollywood while I was figuring that out, which might sound counterproductive, but that was the route I took. And I worked at a nonprofit for about 3 years called Just Detention International. It was a criminal justice nonprofit. And while I was there, that's when I really realized that what I wanted to do was write. So eventually I just took that leap and left.
And what I want to hear about, because I think a lot of people, you know, you were working in a nonprofit in a stable job, and then you sort of had to say, okay, if I'm going to make this Hollywood thing happen, I have to just blind faith. I have to leave here and do this really risky thing. was, and a lot of people, even if they're not trying to be in Hollywood, they might be at a job where they also need to take a leap to do something they really want to pursue. So what went into that decision making? Was it scary? Did you sort of consult with your family? Tell us about that.
So it was terrifying, I'll admit that. I had been taking time off of work to work on some production jobs that I was getting. I PA'd on Sully as a day player, which is someone you call in just to work for the day as many times as you need them. And then after that, I got a job working on A Wrinkle in Time, a feature film that has not come out yet.
Directed by Ava DuVernay.
The amazing Ava DuVernay, yes.
Who also directed Selma.
And that's when I realized that if I really wanted to do this full time, I had to be available and ready to take a job. Mm. The thing about Hollywood is that if you get a job, they want you to start the next day. There is no, can I put in 2 weeks' notice? Like, you have to be ready. And I just realized that if I wanted to be serious about this, I had to take the risk and just take that leap. And it was terrifying. I worked at a great nonprofit. I had a great job. And I had great benefits, like great friends. So it was really, really hard for me to do. I guess a part of me also felt a bit guilty about leaving a nonprofit where I was helping people to do something a bit more self-indulgent, like be a writer. But I mean, I don't want to get too deep with this, but when you work with people who are incarcerated and they can't leave their cell, I was like, I have the power to leave and do whatever I want. So, and I should exercise that freedom and not take it for granted. So I just made a decision to just go for it. But it was terrifying every step of the way.
And then it worked out amazingly because you ended up working as a writer's assistant on Queen Sugar, which is an hour-long drama on OWN, the Oprah Winfrey Network, about a Black family trying to resurrect their late father's sugarcane farm.
Yes. And before we go any further, we have to ask, did you meet Oprah?
Unfortunately, I did not get to meet Oprah, even though I really, really wanted to. Oprah, if you're listening, I still want to meet you.
Oprah, come by our offices.
Just give me a hug and I'll be okay.
On the podcast.
Only one of us has met Oprah. It's not me. So
yes,
that's a story for another day.
I met Oprah, but yeah, we'll tell that story sometime. Now, Queen Sugar was created by Ava DuVernay, who, as we said, directed Selma. She also directed The 13th, and she's incredibly talented. She's a massive inspiration to many women, including us. What was it like to work for her?
She is a powerhouse, and she is exactly what you think she is. When I worked with her on Wrinkle, I think as an assistant, I was kind of amazed at how much she knew about everything going on in the office. Like, I remember her taking some execs or some high up people from Disney around the office, and she stopped and she pointed out our production secretary. She's like, oh, he just got promoted. Like, say hi to him.
Oh,
and I was like, how do you even know that? Because I worked on films, and the director is usually so wrapped up in like the actors, they don't know what's going on with like the little people. But she knew everything going on in every single department at all times. And I thought that was incredibly impressive. And there was also a moment where I took notes during the meetings, production meetings with all the production heads. And she was giving them a mandate for hiring that she wanted diversity. She wanted women. She wanted people of color. And she points at me and she says, she and I are the only two women of color in this room. This has to change. I want more of her. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, you're amazing. And then I also will never forget, I heard two of her production heads talking like, I don't want to be the one to bring Ava like a white guy. You need to go back and look again.
Oh, so her message got through.
Yeah, like she is amazing. She's an amazing champion for change in the industry. And I think working for her was a blessing. And I mean, Ava, you're amazing for listening.
I hope she is. That would be awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about being a writer's assistant, which is what you were on Queen Sugar? For our non-Hollywood listeners, what does that job entail?
Being a writer's assistant, your main job is to take notes in the room. So the writers have pretty much spend the entire day talking about the story and the ideas they have and what they want to see happen. And it's your job to track all of that story, take notes, and organize it in a way so that the writers, when they're writing, especially, can look at the notes and say, oh, that's what we talked about. This is where we landed. This is what we wanted to do. So I essentially just took notes, and sometimes I did some research, because on Queen Sugar, we didn't have a researcher.
It's such a hard job because you really have to be so intensely listening and concentrating for the entire day. I don't think I could have hacked that job, honestly. I don't think I have the stamina. But what's interesting is that's a job that can often lead to getting staffed on a show if it goes well. Not always. I mean, certainly not always, but it can. Mm-hmm. And yet you chose to leave that job and come be our assistant. Of course, we're thrilled about that. And it was a strategic choice you made, which, of course, we always respect strategic choices because we're constantly trying to strategize. Tell us what you were thinking in making that choice.
So I was the writer's assistant on Queen Sugar. Oh, excuse me. I was a writer's assistant. We had two writer's assistants. And it was a great job. There were great people. But I really look at these assistant jobs as like an educational experience. Mm-hmm. That's the way I kind of have to think about it to make up for the shitty pay and everything.
Right.
Exactly.
It is bad pay. So bad. It's horrible.
But I had a great season, and I could have gone back and continued being a writer's assistant, and I would have continued to, like, learn as a writer. But when this job opening came and I realized there were two writers in development, I thought to myself, I've never done that before. I've never worked in development. I don't know how shows are just created from out of thin air. And I thought that'd be, like, a really great experience to have. So, like, if writer's assistant is my writing 101, this could be my writing 201. So I decided to go for it and take that chance. And it is a risk because I do feel like the writer assistant gig is kind of something that, you know, if I stay here for a couple of seasons at the most, I will eventually be given a script or a chance to write. I mean, that's what you hope, at least.
Right.
But this is completely different. I'm assisting two women in development, but it's been great. Like, I feel like this week, I mean, my 3 days, I already learned so much about how you guys are creating story and, like, what the networks are looking for. And I think it's already been worth it.
Well, good. We certainly hope that your strategy pays off. We're going to do our best to give you an education and development, and hopefully we'll be carrying that through an actual making of a show, our own show.
I'm crossing my fingers and my toes crossed right now. Yes.
So thank you, Wafwa, for coming in today and for being a resident in our outer office. We're very excited to have you.
Thank you.
And now, Sarah, it is time for a listener question.
Excellent. So, Liz, neither of us had a celebrity sighting this week, but we did get a great listener question from @DeedleBeetle on Twitter. He said, have you ever been grateful you didn't get a job you really wanted?
And the answer to that question is yes. Yes, we have a few times. But the main one that we really wanted, the job we really wanted and didn't get, was Without a Trace. And for anyone who doesn't remember, Without a Trace was a procedural show on CBS about missing people. Every week someone went missing and they were found, and that was the show. And we were coming off of Angel, which is the Buffy spinoff. We'd been working for Joss Whedon, and we were up for The Shield as one job and Without a Trace as another job. And The Shield was our favorite show. It was our favorite show on television, period.
Yeah, from the time we saw the pilot, which was before it even came out.
Yes, but it was on cable. It did not pay much. And being a team, we split our paycheck. So it really, for us, didn't pay much.
Yeah.
And Without a Trace was a 22-episode network show, which is paid a lot. I mean, so much
more. A lot more.
And Sarah, you had just bought a house in Echo Park, and you had a mortgage for the first time, and money was a concern.
Yes, I was panicked, I think, about money. I'd never had that kind of financial obligation before. And I was very concerned about being able to pay my mortgage. And if it hadn't been for that massive, massive difference in money, it would have been an easy decision because The Shield was our favorite show. But I mean, the money difference, especially when you're a team and you're getting half of a paycheck, it was significant. And that Without a Trace money was definitely very compelling. And I will say, I do miss the residuals we would have gotten from Without a Trace, mm-hmm. because that show, you know, there were so many episodes they replayed forever. If you don't know what residuals are, they're sort of like book royalties for TV. Every time an episode plays somewhere, the writer gets a certain amount of money for that. But all of that said, thank God it worked out the way it did, especially, Liz, for you.
Yes. Thank goodness we took the job on the Shield because I met my husband. His name is Adam Fierro. He was also a writer on the Shield. Mm-hmm. And I mean, not only was the show great for our career.
Right.
Absolutely made Hugely. Our career. But I wouldn't have my marriage or my little boy, Jack Fierro, without having done the Shield. I mean, I don't think I would have met Adam out in the world. Like,
right.
I just feel like I don't know what I would be doing now.
Well, and there's something about sitting in a room with someone, you know, nonstop for 10 hours a day at the Shield. It sometimes was much longer. You got to know each other very yes. well, very quickly.
Yes. And I will, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I was in therapy at the time when we started the Shield. And I said to my therapist, I remember this saying, well, at the Shield, there's going to be a lot of guys because it's a very male show. And they've probably just been working all the time. So maybe I'll meet someone.
Oh, my goodness.
I actually had that thought. And then it happened. I mean, it's just so nuts that it worked out. And
Your light was on.
My light was on, yes.
Sex and the City reference.
Yes. The other funny thing is The Shield was so violent. It was a cop show about dirty cops, and it was extremely violent, but a lot of couples came out of that show.
A lot. There are a lot of kids in the world because of that show.
Yeah, there was something romantic in the air despite the content of the show. Anyone who hasn't watched The Shield, go back and watch it because it's really an amazing show created by Sean Ryan. One of the memories I have of the whole thing with Adam, though, which was sweet that I always will remember, is I had knew I was interested in him, but we hadn't started dating. And his mom and sisters came in with his niece.
I remember that. Yeah.
To say hi. And we met them. And I remember thinking, like, I would love to be part of that family.
Aww.
It was like, but we had never, I mean, we hadn't nothing.
Right.
And I had that thought, like, they just seem like such a great family. And they are a great family. So I got really lucky.
Oh, now I remember them coming in and it was like a light came into the room.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're a lot of fun. They're great people. And I think, like, there's something about just, as you said, you get to know someone so completely on a show. You really see them when they're tired, when they're stressed, when they're angry, when they're excited. I don't know. It's like there's no more surprises after that. I mean, of course, there's always people always surprise you, but it is a great way to meet someone. So anyone out there on a writer's staff, I suggest it. It worked for me. So I'm very glad we did not get that Without a Trace job.
Yes.
Of course, Sarah, if we had gotten the Without a Trace job, maybe you would have met your husband.
I know. Maybe my husband was on Without a Trace. I need to go and like see who was working on Without a Trace.
We have to IMDb.
It's like sliding doors.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, on the whole, it definitely worked out for the best. Thank goodness for bullets dodged.
Yes.
And opportunities missed.
Yes. I will say, on another note, any show that we have wanted to be on that we haven't gotten the job, we never watch that show again.
Oh, no, no. If they don't hire us, they're dead to us.
Yes.
It's true.
Doesn't matter how much we liked it before.
Yeah.
Not watching again. And now it is time for this week's Hollywood Hack. So, Sarah, you cannot go anywhere in this town. This is not an ad, by the way. This is just us talking about it. You cannot go anywhere without seeing someone carrying a Swell water bottle, including you.
You
do not leave your house without a Swell water bottle. So
I don't.
In case anyone doesn't know, what are they?
Well, okay. So, yeah, they're ubiquitous. I think I have three. I might have four. For anyone who doesn't know, these Swell water bottles, they're these very sleek, usually very colorful. Sometimes they have like artists do like a special thing on the outside, and they keep water, like they keep cold water very cold and they keep hot water very hot for a very long time, like all day. They're basically like cool looking thermoses.
And they are extremely trendy. Like if you're leafing through Us Weekly, as I do quite often, there will always be like pictures of celebrities holding Swell water bottles. If you are anywhere, like in any store, like even like Nordstrom carries them now because people want their Swell water bottles. And the thing is, like, yes, they're trendy, but they are actually great water bottles, which is why we're saying they're a Hollywood hack, because they actually are very convenient and look good and feel good.
Yeah, and I can put the lid on and throw one in my bag, and they don't leak. And they,
right.
I find that I drink a lot more water if my water is really cold. When I'm using my Swell bottles, I really do drink a lot more water. That said, you're not so much of a Swell or any water bottle fan, really.
I'm not. First of all, they are super expensive.
They are. Bottles. They can range from like $32 to $80. They're very expensive.
Yes. My issue is I hate washing water bottles. Like, I just don't get, you can't put them in the dishwasher. And for me, like, anything I can't put in the dishwasher, it just doesn't work for me. And it's like, I always think of it as just like growing bacteria because I know I'm not going to wash it. So, and also they are very heavy in my bag.
Yeah. It does add weight for sure. But you're saving the environment.
Which is important. I need to start. I need to start. Maybe this will be my inspiration to start using a water bottle.
Yes. And over time, you're saving money. Not buying, you know, plastic bottles of water.
Yes.
Which is good. And as for the washing, first of all, I will confess, I do put mine in the dishwasher sometimes.
Maybe that's what I'll do.
Yeah, I'm not perfect about that. But also, last year when we were in New York for the Model Woman pilot that we shot, I went to the MoMA store, and they have these really cool, they're kind of shaped like snap peas, and they're little sponges with something kind of hard inside, and you can put them in your water bottle and put in a little warm water and dish soap and just shake them up, and it's a super easy way to clean them. So I just do that, and it's definitely cleaning my water bottles a lot more than I used to. And also I put them in the dishwasher. I do have a pet peeve about Swell, though. I don't know if this is a Swell pet peeve or an Amazon pet peeve.
Okay.
But when I got my last one, I wanted a really big one because I really do drink a lot of water.
You do.
So I went to Amazon, and the one that I wanted was called a men's water bottle.
Oh.
Like the big one, stainless steel, big water bottle, is a men's water bottle, which seems kind of crazy to me. Like, are water bottles gendered now?
Yes,
like,
who knew that there are male right. water bottles and female water bottles?
Yeah, so I have a men's water bottle. I'm okay with that. I think it costs like $60, though. Although, there's the other thing is they do have them now at Target. I think they're so popular that they have a whole line at Target, and they are slightly less expensive. They're like $25. And you definitely do drink more water. I do, at least, when I'm using my Swell water bottle.
And to me, the idea they keep something hot is crucial because, you know, I'm a coffee drinker, and I really would love to carry around hot coffee all day.
Right. If you're a coffee drinker or a tea drinker, you really will have like piping hot coffee or tea.
So Swell water bottles are a Hollywood hack, and they are worth the money if they'll get you to drink more water. Now, we have to add here, Sarah, that our producer, Jennifer Lai, who we always thank at the end of the show, she would like tricks for getting ourselves to drink more water.
Yes, she said that drinking more water is her number one 2017 resolution.
Oh, wow.
So if you have any tricks for Jennifer, email us at happierinhollywood@gmail.com.
And that's it for this episode of Happier in Hollywood. Thanks for listening, and remember to subscribe if you haven't already. And if you like the podcast, please rate and review us in Apple Podcasts. It really helps new listeners find us.
And if you have any pressing questions about Swell water bottles or writer's room food lists or life in Hollywood in general, leave us a voicemail at 949-HAPPY-21. Or email us at happierinhollywood@gmail.com. And don't forget to Instagram your work food photos. #happierinhollywood.
Thank you to our producer, Jennifer Lai, the future water drinker. And thanks to Andy Bowers of Panoply. Also thanks to Gretchen Rubin. Happier in Hollywood is part of the Onward Project.
Get in touch. I'm on Twitter at Sarah M. Fain, and Liz is at Elizabeth Kraft. Until next week, I'm Sarah Fain.
And I'm Liz Kraft. Thanks for joining us. It's a fun job.
And we enjoy it.
Oh, we forgot to talk about the evil donut bringer.
Oh, yeah, we did. Well, that's a whole segment. We could talk about that for like 2 hours.